the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
When Nicole Sandler sits down to do her show, she's the producer, booking the guests, pulling the audio, planning the show, the engineer, running the controls, troubleshooting any problems, playing the sounds, calling the guests, and she's the webmaster, writing the blog, posting the podcast, maintaining the website, not to mention the host, interviewing the guests, explaining the issues, giving opinions, and calling out the bad guys, and then you get the Nicole Sandler Show on RadioOrNot.com.
All right. Well, it's been a few weeks and it's time to check in with Marcy Wheeler again, because there's never a dull moment in these United States of America on so many levels. I mean, there's so many different ways we can go. But Marcy, I'm reading emptywheel.net, as I tend to do, and all your coverage on the Durham report, which was just released. And if people are confused about what the Durham probe was about, let me flash you back a few years to the former guy explaining, sort of.
I hope they now go and take a look at the oranges of the investigation, okay. The beginnings of that investigation about the Mueller report.
The what?
The Mueller report, I wish, covered The oranges. How it started.
Okay.
The beginnings of the investigation. How it started.
The oranges. I think he was trying to say origins and just couldn't find the word. And that happens to some people when they get a little demented. But the Durham probe was launched to investigate the origins of the Russia probe. Yes.
Yeah, it was, and it's really important that people never forget that. Durham's conclusion, which is the one he started with in 2019, which is that the Crossfire Hurricane should not have been opened as a full investigation, even though the Inspector General said it was perfectly okay to open it as a full investigation. He said that in 2019. It took 4 years to come up with the conclusion that he walked into it. But that's not a crime. So literally, John Durham spent 4 years investigating something he didn't find. The Inspector General found a crime, which Durham then prosecuted. In those 4 years, he found no crime. He found no crime. And you're not supposed to open an investigation unless there's a likelihood that a crime was committed. And instead, he spent 4 years investigating a not crime, like the FBI, you know. And in fact, yes, Durham ended up with the conclusion that he started with, which was that Crossfire Hurricane should have been opened maybe as a preliminary investigation rather than a full investigation. But once you make that conclusion, once you say, well, yeah, I guess maybe we should have checked into whether the coffee boy knew of the Russian operation in advance. And we'll come back to the many ways he completely misrepresents the record on George Papadopoulos. But once you agree to the import of opening an investigation into George Papadopoulos, which he says you should have done, then you end up with the crimes that were found. You end up with George Papadopoulos lying about getting advance notice, when he got advance notice of the Russian operation. And then you get to Roger Stone and you get to Paul Manafort and you get to, you know, he's largely silent also about Mike Flynn and Paul Manafort in here too. So it's like in the Igor Danchenko trial, which was the second of two failed prosecutions Durham attempted, Danchenko's lawyers sort of ended by saying, or with one of the FBI witnesses, they're like, okay, let's go over what happened with three of the four original subjects of this investigation. And they, of course, all were found guilty.
Right.
So, I mean, it's like the investigation, you can say the investigation should have been opened differently, no matter how many ways you want to say it, but ultimately, Mueller found that five of Trump's top aides lied to cover up their ties to Russia. Five of them. Five.
Okay. Five. This investigation, in air quotes, went on for 4 years at a cost of, I'm guessing, many millions of dollars.
I've seen the number 6 million, but I haven't checked that document myself.
Wow. And why did it continue for 4 years? Do we know? I mean, why wasn't it shut down after the last administration was out?
Right. Well, because Barr made sure that it couldn't be shut down. By February of 2020, Barr and Durham were both pushing this. It may have stemmed from Russian disinformation. That's the thing that eventually I'll get around to writing about. But basically what happened is the Dutch hacked a server in Russian intelligence, and they found a bunch of documents, including one that said that Hillary was trying to distract from her email investigation the original Russian report, all it said was like she was going to try and vilify Trump for his ties with Russia, which is, last I checked, not a crime.
Right.
But on that same server, there were other documents that are likely disinformation and that have been discredited. But nevertheless, Durham, since February of 2020, chased this theory, which ironically, again, may stem from Russian disinformation. So may stem from the same kind of disinformation that I would argue infiltrated the Steele dossier. So same thing, like we're going to start Russian disinformation and chase this theory. And so he desperately tried to use the dossier and the Alpha Bank allegations, both of which got to the FBI after the investigation had already started, to claim that Hillary was trying to frame Donald Trump, even though Donald Trump's ties to Russia preceded Hillary's awareness that she had been packed by Russia. So the timeline is bizarre, bozo, clown show, and everything kind of falls apart from there. Like, nothing makes sense.
Right. So Bill Barr is the one who's responsible for this investigation continuing until, I guess, Durham said it was over. But if we remember, the last big investigation, which is referenced here, was the Mueller probe. And when that report was done, we didn't get it immediately. No, in fact, the attorney general, then Bill Barr, wrote his own synopsis of what was in the report. Right. It was a work of fiction. And that's all we got to see for, I want to say it was around 3 weeks or maybe even longer, until the redacted version of the report was released. And it created this false narrative, which right-wing media is still quoting. There was no Russia collusion. And it totally misrepresented what was in the report. And that's why, you know, that's what Fox ran with. That's what the MAGA crowd ran with. And that is still the game plan they're going with when we know it's not true. Now, Merrick Garland didn't release any kind of a few pager on what this report was. They just put it out. And again, right-wing media is making their own narrative about what's in it. Did anybody come out with a treatment of what is actually in this report, other than you, because you can go to emptywheel.net and read all about it?
Well, I really highly recommend that none of your listeners read CNN's report on it, because it is atrocious, as
horrible
was Jake Tapper's appearance on it as well. You know, the New York Times has consistently done a good job. Charlie Savage and Adam Goldman have reported this story really well. Remember, they had a blockbuster back in January that revealed a number of things that weren't in the Durham report, such as that when Bill Barr and John Durham ran to Italy chasing down George Papadopoulos's conspiracy theories, they ended up getting a tip about financial improprieties having to deal with Donald Trump. That's not in the report. It is in the New York Times. So I don't always recommend New York Times reporting based on what the story is or who the reporter is. But on Durham, Charlie Savage and Adam Goldman have done a really good job. And so I expect we may see some more from them in the near future on this. But, you know, Charlie also had a nice piece in the last day or so that talked sort of about what you said. So that's where
go to
the New York Times. Don't go to CNN.
What Jake Tapper, is he playing the game with the new owners, the Discovery owners of CNN, and the new Chris Licht game plan over there? Or is he just misinformed? I mean, why could he was so wrong on his coverage of this. I was never a big Jake Tapper fan, but this sounds really more egregious than usual.
Yeah. And I mean, as I said, the CNN had a piece with seven journalists on it, including some good ones like Evan Perez, who's one of the best in the business. But it's, you know, CNN, when John Durham released the Igor Danchenko indictment, went whole hog chasing his conspiracy theories. You may recall, or your listeners may recall, that Durham insinuated that this guy named Chuck Dolan, who has tenuous ties to Hillary Clinton, was the actual source of the P tape, not the two Russian people that Danchenko said were the source, who said that they were out drinking with Danchenko before the report, who, you know, like that totally makes sense that the actual P tape allegation came from those Russians. Durham made it into a claim that it came from these people at the Ritz Hotel, which is itself a misrepresentation. And then based on that misrepresentation, he claimed that the P tape came from this guy, Chuck Dolan, who at the time, you know, barely knew Danchenko, didn't learn, you know, it's an absurd claim. Like, I think it's certainly possible that Danchenko used his ties to Dolan to get entree to the Ritz, and where he asked, you know, I think it, Durham's conspiracy theories aren't entirely without some grounding, but where he takes them to are, you know, well beyond anything there's evidence for, and to a place where there's counter evidence, there's abundant counter evidence. And to make the claims, Durham has to kind of misrepresent how the dossier got formulated and a bunch of other things. So anyway, so CNN ran with that back in November 2021. And then last year after the acquittal, they're like, oh, we never did that. And then after the report, again, seven people write this report. They don't fact check anything. I mean, there's obvious factual errors in this Durham report. And given the fact that some of these journalists have covered it all the way through, it's like, it's really shameful that they don't actually, that they just report what Durham claims rather than what we know to be the truth.
Right. And if I remember correctly, and this seems to never be mentioned anymore, that whole dossier was first commissioned by a Republican. It was Oppo Research on Trump, right? By a Republican. And once Trump became...
No, actually, let me make this point, because please. This point is really important. So Paul Singer funded the Open Source Research Project.
Okay.
A post that I just published right before we got on the phone together. So by the time, you know, by the time you release this later today, uh-huh. some people may have read it. But I know in there, like, Durham finds it really scandalous that Fusion may have asked Christopher Steele to look into Million, and therefore led Danchenko to look up Million. To make that allegation, he points back to the Ria Novosti interview that Million made in April, bragging about his ties to Donald Trump. So ultimately, he's actually sourcing it to Ria Novosti, not to Fusion. But the point is that, like, he's like, oh, you know, Nellie Orr knew about Sergey Million in April. I'm like, well, that's the period where you're transitioning from Paul Singer paying for it to the DNC paying for mm-hmm. it. He doesn't mention Paul Singer's involvement at all. He doesn't, you know, like, you don't need a research firm to come up with Sergey Million, because he was out there bragging to everybody, right? So that's one thing. Paul Singer to the DNC for the open source research, which, by the way, was very good research. Like, mm-hmm. like it hasn't been discredited. There is one thing that they did with Sergey Million later that was kind of dumb, but generally, the open source research was good research,
right?
Because it was based on open source sources. The other thing that happened is in March of 2016, Christopher Steele, and this is actually sort of news, Durham confirmed what had been suspected, that a client that Christopher Steele had in March of 2016 was Oleg Deripaska, who was a central player in the Russian interference in the Russian election interference in 2016. So, you know, before before Fusion hires Christopher Steele, he's already doing research into Paul Manafort for Oleg Deripaska. And when people like me say that the dossier likely got filled with disinformation, one import of that is that you have Oleg Deripaska on one hand trying to increase Paul Manafort's legal jeopardy through Christopher Steele. And on the other hand, you've got Oleg Deripaska through Konstantin Kilimnik using that increased vulnerability that Manafort has that you've created with Christopher Steele, using that to get him to share, to basically enter into a quid pro quo, sharing the campaign strategy for $19 million of debt relief, for a commitment to help carve up Ukraine. So that is a really important dynamic to understanding what really happened in 2016, but no one wants to talk about it because Republicans generally are the only ones who want to talk about the likelihood that it was filled with disinformation, and they don't want to think through the implications of it. And another one of the implications of the dossier being filled with disinformation is that the stories about Michael Cohen that everyone, that really were the worst stories in the dossier, those likely came from, those are attributed to by Igor Danchenko to his friend Olga Galkina, who ended up having close ties with Dmitry Peskov through this guy, Chuck Dolan. You don't need to know those details. The important part is the one guy in Russia who absolutely knew that Michael Cohen had in fact made a secret phone call to the Kremlin during the election was Dmitry Peskov. And that's the likely source of the story that Michael Cohen made other secret contacts with the Kremlin. About another topic altogether. And so once you understand that, then the similarity between those stories and the fact that Dmitry Peskov would have known that Michael Cohen and Donald Trump were lying about having made this compromising call to Moscow during the election, to Dmitry Peskov during the election. Once you know that, then the dossier begins to look very different. Durham doesn't do any of that because, of course, that's not his project.
Right. So two things here. One is, of course, Paul Singer, no friend of the left. He's known as a vulture capitalist. So he's the one who started it, funded it at the beginning. Once Trump was the nominee and the DNC took over, I don't know how that came about. But they're not the ones who originated this. So there's that.
They're not the ones who originated the Oppo research into Trump's Russian ties.
Right.
The Steele dossier was never paid for by Singer, but where Steele was working before the DNC was Oleg Deripaska. Gotcha. And that's actually far more significant than the Singer tie because it means that naively Christopher Steele was working for the guy who was really one of the architects, as far as we know, of the Russian interference effort.
Wow. Wow. The other thing that is even larger than this that I feel I have to say, Marcy Wheeler, is that this whole thing is about Russia's interference in the election. And you still have Donald Trump saying the Russia hoax, and his minions, both in Congress and in his sycophantic followers, saying the same thing. And you've got the Maddie Dick Picks contingent of formerly credible journalists who've gone off the deep end, who say the Russia thing, who are echoing Donald Trump, Russia is a hoax. Russia did interfere in the election, did they not? I mean, why are we still debating this?
Yeah, Russia interfered in the election, but, you know, I someday will write a very long piece arguing that this is one of the most successful intelligence operations of all time because they did more than interfere to help Donald Trump. Remember that the IRA, the trolling effort, was an effort to split up America. It was an effort to get
the IRA is that Internet Resource Associates or whatever that Russian group
was. Internet Research Agency.
Okay.
And so they were the trolls. And that trolling effort wasn't that big of a deal. That, you know, like Republicans had a much more vigorous trolling effort that was adjacent to Donald Trump and adjacent to Weave, Andrew Auenheimer, who's a Nazi and who was living in Russian-controlled territory at the time. So that's actually a far more interesting connection if you want to talk about social media trolling. But the Russian goal was to get us throttling each other. Mm-hmm. And again, this is why I think it's important to consider the likelihood that the dossier was filled with Russian disinformation, because what it did is we're still fighting about the dossier.
Yeah.
People, you know, Trump, Maddie Dick Pics, those people all use the dossier as a stand-in for the Russian for the Russian investigation. And that strategy, by the way, came from Paul Manafort, who met with a Deripaska associate in January 2017, came back from that meeting and said, hey, let's focus on the dossier. So the dossier from day one was meant to be a stand-in for the real Russian investigation. And it has been used as such. And because it was so unreliable, the right is like, oh, you know, you started this investigation into Donald Trump based on this unreliable information. It is a problem that it was used and that even after they learned about the problems with it, that they didn't revise the Carter Page FISA applications. That's a real problem, and I don't want to diminish that. But you know, one of the things that is crystal clear. I mean, I learned this when I wrote my long series on the Columbia Journalism Review, really trashy, garbage series on the coverage of the Russian investigation, is to make that claim, that the interest in Donald Trump and Russia started from the dossier. First of all, you have to ignore the Russia, are you listening comment. And they right. always do that. And it shows up in Durham's report four times, but almost all indirectly. He quotes the FBI saying, well, one of the reasons we thought that we had to investigate is because Donald Trump had just asked for assistance. And he doesn't seem to think that that was a problem, that it was a problem for Donald Trump to ask for the assistance of a hostile foreign power
to get the hacked emails from his political opponent. It's astounding.
Right. And I think that probably somewhere deep within the FBI, they understand there is at least a likelihood that Roger Stone crafted that statement, because immediately after that, the days after that, he was drafting tweets for Trump. He didn't send those tweets, but he was drafting tweets that basically said, hey, we want to get in bed with Russia. That's what Stone was doing in those days at a time where he was trying to get more help from Russia. So but in any way, we also know that even in January of 2017, there was already reporting on Mike Flynn's lies about trying to intervene to stop sanctions by the time the dossier was released. And people like to obscure that timeline, too. But it is, in fact, the case that New York Times and Washington Post, especially in this case, were already over Mike Flynn before the dossier dropped. And so that's something else that always falls out from this narrative that it was all about the dossier. It was like, no, it was about Mike Flynn and Jared Kushner and Donald Trump and the attorney general and about five other people lying about their ties to Russia. That's, you know, that's where the story started, and it was never alleviated.
I mean,
you know, like after Trump said, Russia, are you listening? In that same press appearance, and this often gets forgotten, he said two other things that were alarming. One is he said, well, maybe I'll look at turning over Crimea, recognizing the annexation of Crimea. The other thing he said is he denied that any of his business deals, he's like, I decided not to do the business deals with Russia. The Trump Tower Moscow deal was still live at that point.
Right.
And so, again, back to when Dmitry Peskov saw that statement, he knew that he had Trump on the hook, because he knew that he had a secret that he was keeping with Trump and Michael Cohen.
Right. And I'm sure that was just one of many, because there was dirt on Trump out there. There still is. You know, Marcy Wheeler, when I first started reading on emptywheel.net about your coverage of the Durham report, you had a post up about seven things not mentioned in the Durham report that was very telling. And now you've increased it to eight. I'm sure that number may even go up as the, you know, the coverage continues. Your coverage, not the corporate media, because they're not doing their job. Another reason why you should be reading and supporting EmptyWheel.net, but more on that later. So what did Durham conveniently leave out of the report? What are these eight things and why do they make a difference?
I'm going to pull it up so I make sure I don't miss any. But one of the things that he left out is, as I mentioned earlier, is he left out the tip that the Italians gave to Trump, gave to Durham and Barr when they showed up in 2019. So he didn't explain what the tip was and what happened with it. So it's not a full report of everything he investigated. And tellingly, he chose not to talk about the crime that he covered up for Donald Trump. Another thing in there is what got them to Italy, what got Bill Barr and John Durham to go on a junket to Italy and to other places in Europe were these lies that George Papadopoulos told, or conspiracy theories that he told to Congress. And they were basically, the conspiracy theories were basically stories that had been laundered through The Hill and The Daily Caller. Mm-hmm. And Papadopoulos went to Congress and said, well, I heard in The Hill, you know, John Solomon wrote in The Hill that X, Y, and Z. And then those Republicans treated it as true, including Mark Meadows. He was leading that investigation. And then they brought those allegations to DOJ. And DOJ, Barr and Durham jumped on a plane and went to Italy together. One of the things, I've done another post to, we'll cycle back to it. But Durham is just grossly misleading about what the record shows about George Papadopoulos. And it's telling that he doesn't describe those conspiracy theory junkets, because he would have to say that they were conspiracy theories and there was nothing there. Right. And that would undermine the credibility of George Papadopoulos. Durham doesn't describe the investigative failures he made. So, for example, famously, DOJ IG had two phones from Jim Baker. And Durham didn't discover them until, I think, January of 2022. So 3 months after, no, sorry, 4 months after indicting Michael Sussman. Then another 4 months after that, so at this point, 8 months after indicting Michael Sussman, Durham asked Jim Baker to go check his iCloud account to see if he had texts that he had exchanged with Sussman. And the reason he did that is because Sussman kept saying, you know, I know that we worked to kill this New York Times story, which was actually very exculpatory. And Durham didn't check any of those things. And so he didn't, like, the facts before him changed dramatically after the time that he indicted Sussman. In the Danchenko case, he relied in his indictment on what Sergey Millian had said on Twitter. Mm-hmm. On Twitter. And then he didn't actually interview Millian until February of 2022. And then Millian stiffed him. Like, Millian refused to show up and testify under oath to the claims he made to Durham. And Durham didn't find that hilarious at all, but I do. Durham makes a nod to connections that Mueller found, but the only one he raises is the June 9th meeting. So he doesn't include the Trump Tower Moscow, which, for the reasons I've already explained, are really important because they are very damning, but they also make the disinformation angle a lot more serious. He doesn't mention Konstantin Klimnik
at all.
One of the things Durham says to say, you know, Durham says FBI shouldn't have opened this up as a full investigation because the IC didn't know of any ties between Trump and or Trump's people and Russian intelligence. And now, 4 years later, we know that Paul Manafort, his campaign manager, went into a cigar bar on August 2nd, 2016, and briefed him on the campaign strategy, briefed a guy that now the IC, I think, across the board, understands to be a Russian agent, a Russian spy. And since then, in 2020, so under Trump still, the IC came to the conclusion that, in fact, Klimnik had shared that campaign data with other Russian spies. So, you know, the Durham's theory that you shouldn't open a full investigation is premised on the fact that the IC didn't know enough about the spooks who were circling around Trump. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, that's why the FBI carries out the investigation. He obscures the timeline by obscuring Guccifer 2.0's role. And that's important because of his Hillary Clinton framed Donald Trump story. Again, before Hillary knew she had been hacked, Donald Trump was already in bed with Russia. And he does a lot to obscure that. Durham focuses a lot on the, because remember, Bill Barr said that Donald Trump had been spied on. And the only way you get to that claim is because Carter Page, they didn't get a FISA order on Carter Page until after he was off the campaign. So the only way you get to that claim is through the use of informants. And of course, in the same period when they were using two informants to talk to Papadopoulos and Page, the FBI was using a or many informants to investigate the Clinton Foundation. In the DOJ IG report on Carter Page, where there's a very long discussion of the informants who recorded conversations with Papadopoulos and Page, they include the texts of two guys handling a Clinton Foundation informant who were egregiously pro-Trump. As soon as Trump wins, they're like, ha ha, you know, things are going to change around here. They said the exact equivalent to the kinds of things that Peter Strzok said, but they were the ones managing an informant during the election targeting Hillary Clinton. And, you know, Durham makes this great effort in his report to suggest that FBI treated Hillary Clinton nicer than they treated, which is ridiculous. Like Jim Comey tanked her right. campaign, but you know, the FBI treated Hillary Clinton nicer than they treated Trump, right. even though he confirms that Clinton cash was used to predicate that investigation.
The book, know, so this filled with falsisms book called Clinton Cash, right?
Done in conjunction with the ultimate campaign manager for Donald Trump. I mean, right. that was a Bannon project.
Uh-huh.
So he leaves off that informant, and by leaving off that informant, he has to, because it's the only way it can serve his narrative that Hillary got treated worse than Donald Trump did. It's nonsense. And then the other thing, and this I don't know what to make of, but I found it interesting, is he doesn't mention the investigation he did into Mike Flynn. It has been suggested to me possibly he doesn't mention it because all that was done before he became a special counsel, and therefore legally he doesn't have to include it. And that may be the technical explanation for why that's true. But I find that interesting because remember that Nora Danahy quit because they were trying to come out with an interim report before the election. And after she quit, stuff got shared from Durham to the Jeffrey Jensen investigation, which was another investigation that Barr invented to kind of for political gain. And that came out when they were trying to overturn the prosecution of Mike Flynn. And I found problems in that work. I found that they had literally altered Peter Strzok and
Lisa Page.
Andrew McCabe's notes.
Oh, Andrew McCabe.
They added dates, and I think they altered something else with the redaction. And then they also did this interview with a pro-Trump, that's somebody who sent pro-Trump texts on his FBI phone. They did an interview with him, and he's like, Jeannie Reed was crazy. And I was like, And when you read his description of it in this FBI 302, you see that it's not that Jeannie Reed's crazy. It's that he's an abusive. He was abusing his position in the workplace against a woman and using very gendered terms for it. Mm-hmm. He also that 302 was redacted in ways to be misleading to the judge. So I don't know why the Mike Flynn stuff isn't there, because we know that Durham investigated it. I am curious why it's not there.
You know, and you made an interesting comment, the little blurb at the top of the post. You say if John Durham closed just a handful of enormous gaps in his shoddy report, it would all fall apart. And that's why this is important. That's why these omissions are so important, because you're saying there are gaping holes that he doesn't address. And if he had, then his whole narrative collapses.
Yeah, I mean, let me give you one more example, like, because again, like, this is not there's no place for this in a criminal investigation. But nevertheless, Durham spent a lot of time trying to compare how Hillary was investigated to how Trump was investigated. Again, ignoring the email investigation, ignoring the fact that Jim Comey tanked her campaign. And one of the things, you know, echoing Congress. One of his conclusions, by the way, is you shouldn't listen to what Congress says. But much of this investigation was dictated by people like Mark Meadows and Chuck Grassley. So echoing something Chuck Grassley said, he said, oh, Hillary Clinton was given a defensive briefing when a different foreign country was targeting her campaign. What he buries is that Hillary Clinton was given a defensive briefing 8 months at least after the FBI opened this investigation. No, 10 months. So in other words, he's complaining that Hillary Clinton, 10 months into an investigation, got a defensive briefing. But we know that Trump, 4 months after the FBI opened the investigation into Mike Flynn, briefed him about Mike Flynn in the wake of the Sergey Kislyak lies. So in fact, Donald Trump got a defensive briefing more quickly than Hillary Clinton. And nevertheless, Durham claims that there's so much up is down in this report.
Opposite world.
And that's the only way he could come up with any conclusion that is, except for I was wrong. And, you know, when I went to court, I got my ass handed to me. And when I went to court, when I had to abide by the rules of criminal procedure, my conspiracy theories crumbled.
Right.
Literally crumbled.
Right. And so taking all that, and then again, these formerly decent reporters who are all of a sudden echoing Donald Trump's, you know, Russia hoax line, and all of the sycophants that subscribe to that line of thought are still saying that the whole Russia thing is a hoax. That I keep coming back to because it is so infuriating that because of the disinformation put out by a big portion of the media, a good portion of the American public believes.
Right. And again, I hate to be repetitive, but I'm going to repeat again. That's one of the reasons I think it's important to come to grips with the fact that the dossier was likely disinformation, mm-hmm. or was filled with disinformation, because I would argue that the scope of the Russian operation from 2016 to 2017, and included the shadow brokers, the release of all these NSA files, devastated the NSA, included WikiLeaks' release of CIA's hacking tools, devastated the CIA, so NSA, CIA. And then you spend 4 years aggressively discrediting the FBI, which continued to yesterday, right?
Yes.
When Jim Jordan had this hearing where he turned these supporters of January 6th into martyrs,
right?
Because they were fired because they refused to arrest a suspected terrorist, right?
Not only and called them whistleblowers and refused to turn over their testimony to the other party who's on the committee. Everything about this was infuriating.
Right. And again, I mean, virtually every hearing that Jordan has done basically has platformed Russian conspiracy theories. I mean, Tulsi Gabbard got to go on there saying that the government was weaponized because Hillary Clinton, as a private citizen, said that she was a Russian tool. Like, you know, it's crazy. And then Matty Dick Picks came in and made his ridiculous claims. And, you know, so, you know, at some point we need to start talking about the fact that Jim, that committee is exclusively serving the interests of Russia at this point. But part of the Russian operation ended up taking out the FBI's top Russia experts,
mm-hmm.
one of DOJ's top Russia experts, some other Russia experts in other parts of the government. I mean, so effectively, what the attack on the Russian investigation did is neutralize a lot of expertise within the U.S. government about Russia. And, you know, maybe that's a coincidence. Maybe, you know, that's what happens when you mobilize a narcissist like Donald Trump, yeah. is that he then becomes paranoid and starts eating your face, right? You know, he becomes paranoid and starts attacking the things that he is paranoid about. And so he, you know, he did a lot of damage to Russian expertise in the U.S. government. I think one of the reasons that Putin was so surprised by the failure of Ukraine is that it took Biden not that long to recover it, or maybe it was hidden in places while Donald Trump was trying to destroy it. But I think that Putin had assumed that he had devastated U.S. intelligence for a lot longer than he did. But, you know, we're still all throttling each other. We're still fighting about whether the Russian investigation was true or not. It, you know, it was true. It was productive. It was interfered with. Trump pardoned his way out of it. And that was that, you know, Russia has to be thrilled.
Yes.
But to this day, it is still making, it is still, you know, the degree to which we're trying to kill each other continues to go up on a daily basis. And that process was largely started when the FBI wisely opened an investigation into whether Donald Trump had been had gotten advance notice, which he did, of the attack on his opponent.
Wow. And the fact that we're still throttling each other over what it said, what the Mueller report says, you know, it's like, this is what I always refer to with opposite world. You can put the facts right here in black and white, and there are people who will just say the opposite. They will not agree. But Bill Barr set the table on that one by releasing his executive summary, which totally misrepresented what was in the report.
Yeah, I want to say one other thing that Barr did, too, because it doesn't get anywhere near enough attention. Barr politicized the FOIA process by which and the declassification process. So the, you know, the Mueller report was declassified multiple times over the course of the last declassification was last year, I think. Jason Leopold, of course, had this long running FOIA. Yes. And on the night before the 2020 election, Barr released a FOIA, a new version of the Mueller report. And in that new version of the Mueller report, there was a footnote that said, we haven't charged Roger Stone with conspiring with Russia to hack because we're still investigating.
Okay.
So when people say Mueller found no evidence of conspiracy, which is what CNN said, by the way, they said no evidence of conspiracy, when we know that, in fact, Mueller concluded there wasn't enough to charge. Did you lose me?
No, I hear you. Your video froze for whatever. Okay, you're back now. Go ahead.
But in fact, that footnote, which was only declassified the night before the 2020 election, revealed that at least when Mueller closed up shop in 2019, he was DOJ, the DC U.S. Attorney's Office, was still investigating whether Roger Stone had conspired with Russia in a hack and leak. I have a theory, partly based on the clemency record that's in Donald Trump, that was found in Donald Trump's drawer with a report that may or may not have to do with Emmanuel Macron. I have a theory that Mueller was able to develop more evidence that Stone and people like Jack Posobiec did. We know that we know that Posobiec was involved in this, did work with GRU in the hack and leak of Emmanuel Macron in 2017. And that would make sense because that, you know, that was, that happened closer to the time when the investigation to Stone was open. So that's my theory. I don't know that to be true. But again, what I'm literally the only journalist who has reported this. And I keep reporting it and no one wants to go back and say, gosh, that footnote is there. She's right about that. But it is, in fact, the case that when Mueller shut down, and we know that the investigation into Stone was ongoing because there were something like 8 warrants that he did not receive until after trial, 8 warrants that were for additional investigation that he did not know about. And those were about whether he conspired with Russia in a hack and leak. So the core question of whether Roger Stone conspired with Russia remained ongoing at least through 2020.
Yeah. And that's why it's so important. That's why your work is so important, Marcy, because you are reporting things that the corporate media isn't. I don't know if it's laziness or complicity. I don't know the reasoning, but, you know, thank goodness you're doing this work. Is there anything about this Durham report that we didn't talk about that that we need to know?
George Papadopoulos. No, yeah. I still have a couple of posts coming.
Yeah, you said you tweeted out that there were still three posts. No one is condemning Durham for his abuse of due process when he still claims people lied when a jury told him differently. Durham's digital slut shaming of Hillary and Durham's cowardice about Russian disinformation, which we did talk about that one. But
yeah.
So,
And then I did a fourth post this morning while I was trying to work on the. I mean, one, Durham, it is true that in his executive summary, Durham states as fact that Danchenko and Sussman made false statements to the government. And that's grotesque. He's a prosecutor. A jury told him that was not true, or told him that he didn't have proof beyond a reasonable doubt. A judge told him that one of the things he claims Danchenko made a false statement about was literally true. Mm. Like the P tape, the thing that he hung his P tapes theory on, literally true. And Durham prosecuted Danchenko for it. And he still is claiming that Danchenko lied about it when he's wrong about that. But the other thing that people like, there's been some allusions to this. Phil Bump had a good part on, had a good column on it the other day, but starting in February 2020, Durham was trying to prove that Hillary Clinton framed Donald Trump. Okay. And his basis for that is Hillary's people brought two allegations to the FBI, the dossier and the Alpha Bank, and those ended up being, you know, falling apart. The Alpha Bank, by the way, the Sussman trial proved that the FBI really screwed up that investigation. So we don't know what the Alpha Bank anomalies were, because the FBI screwed up the investigation, made really embarrassing failures in the investigation. I'm not saying it. Durham's own prosecutor said it in the closing arguments. So, the other thing that he relies on to make this claim that Hillary Clinton framed Donald Trump is that she asked, I mean, these claims in the middle of the Durham report, which no one has called attention to, which I plan to, are just, they're slut shaming. They are victim blaming, because he, at one point he says, he basically says, it's proof that Hillary Clinton was trying to frame Donald Trump because she asked the FBI to publicly state that Russia had hacked her. Think about that. Like, here's a victim trying to run a presidential campaign while still being hacked. People don't understand this, but right. The most valuable hack that the Russians made was in September, not in April, not in May, not in February. It was in September. So she's being hacked all the way through the election. And she, you know, she asked the FBI, can you please say publicly that I was hacked by Russia? And they refused to do it. You know, I can understand why they refused to do it. But Durham points to that as evidence that she conspired to frame Donald Trump because she was hacked.
Oh,
because
my
she was
God.
Hacked by Russia.
Uh-huh.
And it's just grotesque that he makes this claim, that he tries to criminalize being a victim. But that's what's at the core of this report. And it's just, it is positively grotesque.
And thank you for summing it up like that, because people need to know this. Because you're not going to get it from, certainly not from the right wing media, not from Fox or any of those outlets, but you're also not going to get it from most of the corporate media. Maybe the New York Times
like I
is
said,
doing
Phil
good
Bump
job.
Did yeah. a good piece on it in the Washington Post. So you should look at that. You should look at what Charlie Savage is writing. That's some good reporting out there.
Okay. So Marcy Wheeler, we could keep going on this, but let's do a touch on a couple of other stories that have broken since we last spoke. Let's start with yesterday. Supreme Court Section 230, which is what Trump has been bitching about, that the social media companies are, I don't even know what his argument was, but basically the Supreme Court said Section 230 stands. Social media companies are not responsible for what people post on their platforms.
Yeah, I don't think they were great cases to make these arguments, but you know, someday in the near future, I'm going to do a piece on Elon Musk's fascism machine. And so, you know, I'd be shocked if Ginni Thomas didn't have a solid understanding of what Elon Musk was up to, trying to turn Twitter back into a fascism machine. And so it's good that Section 230 stands, but understand that if and when Musk uses Twitter to support fascism in the United States, he's going to rely on Section 230 to say that he doesn't need to. I mean, Twitter and Facebook did try and prevent the election from being stolen in 2020, and then they let down their guard, and that's what led to the insurrection. And so Elon Musk's lesson is you take down the guard entirely. And the lesson that Trump learned in 2016 is that trolling actually works. Disinformation really works. And so you put those things together. And that's what I think Musk would like to do in 2024. I think he's ruined Twitter. So, probably it's going to fail. But I think that maybe not Musk himself, but people around Musk had that explicit intent. And that's one of the reasons why he welcomed back all the Nazis. But
That's frightening. So that's a story developing. You will get into it at some point, but people need to know that that happened. The other thing is the Rudy Giuliani filing, the Rudy Giuliani charges, which the sexual stuff and what he did with this woman that he hired is just so offensive and so ugly and disturbing. But the other part that I'm not hearing enough about is the allegation that Rudy was peddling pardons for $2 million, a fee that he would split with the former guy. What?
Yeah, I mean, we know that Roger Stone was doing the same, right? And so I think that we'll see what comes of that lawsuit. It's a lawsuit, right?
Yes.
And sometimes people can make allegations in lawsuits and see what comes of it. The other thing that's important about that lawsuit is it talks about communications that Ruby Freeman is trying to get. Ruby Freeman, remember, is the African-American poll worker or election tabulator who Rudy literally sicked a lynch mob after.
And her daughter. It was Ruby Freeman and her daughter.
Because her daughter handed her a ginger mint, and
yes,
Rudy Giuliani decided to sick a lynch mob on them for, you know, political gain. And they've been suing Rudy, and Rudy is trying very hard to hide communication. He's trying to say, well, I can't get to my text, sorry. And it's bogus. But one of the things that lawsuit is going to do is it's going to make it easier for Ruby Freeman to say, here's what Rudy is trying to hide. So I think that's another interesting side of this. But it's interesting when you consider that Jared Kushner was in charge of pardons for Trump and chose not to go through the pardon attorney. And so most of the big pardons anyway, didn't go through the pardon attorney. And we know that Roger Stone and Rudy Giuliani both believed that they could sell pardons. And we know that Rudy, allegedly at least, didn't go through the pardon attorney to prevent any of this from being checked. Something like six of the files found seized from Trump's office deal with pardons.
Oh.
Including the Roger Stone one that I just told you about.
The Roger Stone one, we knew.
The other ones are fairly contentious pardons, like Blagojevich is on there, was found in a drawer. There's these border guards that were pardoned, contentious pardons. And Trump tried to claw those back by saying they were personal. And the government's like, they're pardon paperwork. That's clearly presidential, right? And so there may be something of interest in those documents as well. But I think that, we'll see whether there's substance, not just Rudy or Stone or other people were selling pardons, because the whole process was really corrupt. I mean, I made a point after the disastrous CNN town hall that Caitlin Caitlin Collins did talk pardons, but only because a Republican operative asked her whether Trump whether he was going to pardon all the Jan 6 folks, right? So this is a guy who he's a lawyer for the Republicans. He should never have asked
the question.
That's
who the guy who asked that question was?
Yeah, he's a sometime. Yeah. So and Collins did say that he volunteered on the 2020 campaign and 2022 campaign. But he's basically a Republican lawyer. Right. So he gets up, says, how about pardons? And Collins doesn't raise all the other parts. Like, we are not talking about how corrupt it was that Trump pardoned Manafort to get Manafort to lie about what actually happened on August 2, 2016. We are not talking about the fact that Trump pardoned Roger Stone in response to Roger Stone saying, the prosecutors want to know what I said to you on these 30 calls during 2016, where we talked about, the Russians helping you out. And there needs to be a lot more attention, not to just the allegation of sold pardons, but to the fact that the reason people believe nothing came out of the Russian investigation is because Trump pardoned his way out of trouble in the Russian investigation.
Right. And, and you brought up the CNN town hall. That was going to be the last thing I was going to ask you about. That was such a travesty. It was so infuriating. I was throwing things at the TV and I finally had to leave the room because I couldn't watch it anymore. It was so wrong on every level. But it seems that Donald Trump implicated himself. It seems that he admitted to at least one, if not more, crimes. Will that be used against him, do you think? And I'll go back to that same question that I keep raising. Do you think he will be prosecuted for all these things that we're talking about? Or will he just float through and become the Republican nominee and perhaps get reelected to the White House?
Well, one of the things that came out in New York Times in the last day or so is that Fannie Willis seems to have a very good timeline of when she's going to charge Donald Trump, and it's in August. So it's going to be right before the first debate.
Wow.
And I think that they're, Sununu is making moves about getting in. What's his name from Virginia is making moves mm-hmm. about getting in. So I think Republicans realize that your god-awful governor has already ruined his chances. And there are people who I think are setting themselves up to swoop in if something really comes of it. I think that steps that Jack Smith has recently taken to further document what the declassification reality was in the Trump White House suggests he's obviously still investigating obstruction, but also investigating espionage. He is still very actively considering whether he can charge the former president with Espionage Act. So, I think he's going to be charged. I think something else that happened today, right before we got on the call, which will be old news by the time you put this on evening, is that Shane LeMond, who was the head of intelligence for D.C. police, was arrested on obstruction charges for helping Enrique Tarrio.
I was reading the charges right before we came on. I think you had posted it, the USA versus Shane LeMond. And it's stunning that they've got text messages and communications between this guy, LeMond, who was a member of the Metropolitan Police Department, and Enrique Tarrio.
Yeah. Now, we knew that. That showed up all the way through the Proud Boys case. But I think that's I have long expected to see DOJ be able to move on certain cases after the Proud Boys verdict came in. And that's one that was fairly obvious that they were going to wait on. And so now they've indicted him. And we see that, the D.C. cops were basically in bed with the fascists who attacked D.C. Yep. And I expect that, again, because the Proud Boys trial finally ended, we're going to begin to see movement in those kinds of directions.
I hope so, because I'll tell you something. It's like history repeating itself again and again and again. And we seem to not learn our lessons. It's one thing, everybody makes mistakes, but you got to learn from the mistakes. And we seem to not learn. Hopefully somebody is learning. Marcy Wheeler, find her at emptywheel.net. It should be like one of your first stops every morning to read what she's reporting, because she's doing work that nobody else is, or very few others are approaching. So, Marcy, thank you. I appreciate your appearances on this show more than I can express. You do great work, and I'm in awe of you.
Always great to be on.
For me too. Thank you. And with that, another week is in history books. Thank goodness this one's over. Thank you for bearing with me this week. As always, I appreciate your support. Have a great weekend, and we'll do it again next week. Hopefully a little better than we did this week. See you Monday.